That's Mr. James Brown. It's one of those great James Brown lost 45s. It's called Chani on Chan. Walk Like a Man, Four Seasons. And, of course, the guy who arranged that particular record is Charlie Colalo. Welcome, Charlie Colalo, to Relics of Rarities.
How are you?
Good, and how are you doing tonight?
Okay.
You see, we called him up. We gave him his wake-up call. It's nice to be a star. You get to relax on a Saturday night while guys like me are up until the wee hours of the morning playing records until late night.
It's only because you want to.
But, you know, actually, you probably are used to those late nights. I got to believe that when, you know, you recorded and you were working on in the studio, that there was probably mostly night sessions that you worked on. Wouldn't that be pretty much correct?
Not really.
You guys like to work during the daytime?
No, but the record business was a big change from being a musician working in clubs. Because you could work from 10 o'clock in the morning and you could really finish by 5 or 6 at night. At least in the old days, you could.
And that's how you started out, actually, as a musician. Looking at your bio, it says that, you know, in the early days, as a young fella, Charlie, your aspirations were actually to be, I guess, your own recording star. And that's kind of how you hooked up with one of your biggest client. I guess he is your biggest client, was Frankie Valli. You did the most hits with Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. Where did you and Frankie, take us back into time. How old were you? You know, what were you doing, and how did you actually hook up with Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons?
I was working in a club in Newark, New Jersey on Bloomfield Avenue.
That's dangerous by itself.
Yeah, I know. Back then, it really was dangerous.
Okay. I thought you were going to say that back then, and actually, you know, I heard from so many people that, you know, in the early days, Newark was actually a beautiful place, and it was safe. You knew where you could go and so forth. But, okay, so you're playing at a club. How old were you at the time?
I was out of high school, so I must have been about years old. But I'll tell you how dangerous the neighborhood was. We were working in the same club that I met Frankie, and before I met him, there was a, we used to play 40 minutes on, 20 minutes off. We used to play 5 hours a night. So I think we were in like the first set, and we were playing a theme song to come off the stage, and a customer yells out, "Play Harlem Nocturne," and, you know, one of those guttural sounding voices.
Okay.
And, We walked off the stage. So I walked into the bathroom after the set, and he walks into the bathroom after me. 38 to my head, and says, "Didn't I tell you to play Harlem Nocturne?"
I guess you learned it pretty quick.
Well, 3 days later, the same guy who had the gun in my head shot a councilman in Newark, and he killed him. So, I mean, it was a dangerous place.
And he probably served little time in jail, right?
Yeah. But that's another story, which I'll tell you later, because I did run into him one other time.
So you actually, I take it then, you grew up in Newark? Is that where you're from?
Yes. Originally from Down Neck.
Which is what, a part of Newark?
It's the place down past the Penn Station that's actually surrounded by the railroad tracks.
Okay.
But now, we were not really on the other side of we weren't from the other side of the tracks. We were the other side of the tracks.
And Frankie was from what, Stephen Crane Village, which was a big development, big neighborhood in Newark?
It was the projects. It was part of the First Ward.
Which is where he was from.
Right.
So what did you play in the band? What was the name of your band?
The name of the band was the Victorians. And we were five guys that went to a music and arts high school together. And when we got out of school, we had this band and we traveled around the country.
But when you traveled around the country as a signed recording act or just trying to make it?
No, back then, because, you know, a lot of this was the start of television. Not everybody had television, so when people didn't have television or movies were not that big a thing, people at night, instead of staying home, they went out to bars or supper clubs, and we used to play the bars and supper clubs.
But when you toured as the Victorians, because there was a group called the Victorians, several of them that actually had a record contract, but that wasn't you.
The group called the Victorians that had a record contract that I recorded was the guys in my band.
Really?
Yeah.
You talk about the Victorians that were on, what was it, Liberty?
I don't remember the label, but I...
Well, do you remember the songs you recorded with them?
No, I don't. I remember that the songs were from England, and but I can't really remember what the song
was. I mean, there was a song, I have to go pull my Victorian 45, but there was... a group, you know, you're invited to a party, but that was kind of like a girl group sound. Was there a girl group added to the Victorians?
No.
Okay. Anyway, so you were in the Victorians, and what were you playing in the Victorians? What was your job in that group?
I was playing accordion. And like all good Italian...
You threw it away and picked up a guitar, right?
No. Actually, the accordion was one of the instruments that was really valuable to me in my life because I learned harmony from playing the accordion. But the way I played the accordion was it was amplified, and I really had it rigged so that it sounded like an organ. So I was able to play the bass lines on the accordion and also play the chords. And we had two horns. We had a trumpet and a saxophone. And we also had a bass player who also sang. So when he put his bass down, I played the bass on the accordion and a drum. So the band that we had, that when Frankie walked into the club the night that I met him.
And what was the name of the club again?
I can't remember it. People have asked me that. In fact, I even asked Frankie once if he remembered where the club was. He said it was down the street from Jimmy Buff's. So anybody who knows Bloomfield Avenue would know that it was down the street from Jimmy
Buff's. Down the street from Jimmy Buff's Bloomfield Avenue. I know we have some listeners from the Newark, New Jersey area, so maybe they'll be out there and they'll call in tonight and they'll refresh your memory as to what club it was.
Well, that would be great, because I know a lot of people have asked me that in the past. But Frankie walked into this club one night, and he heard the band, and he asked who wrote the arrangements. And one of the guys in the band pointed to me. And I knew who he was because he had already had a hit record.
What was the song that was the hit at the time? Come See Bella or?
No, Come See Bella was recorded when I was one of the four lovers. He had a hit record called You're the Apple of My Eye, which was on RCA Victor. It was in 1956, and I met him in 1958. So.
But word got around that there was this hot shot in the neighborhood, and he had a record on RCA, and it was getting a lot of airplay and so forth. So I guess he was sort of like known in your area, looked up to.
Well, not really. I only knew them because they made the most money out of all the bands that were playing the bars because they had the hit record.
Well, that's worth admiration, Charlie.
But I had no idea who Frankie Valli really was.
Okay.
But then after I met him, and I started to talk to him, I realized how brilliant he was. Although he didn't have a formal education, he was really brilliant, knowledgeable about music, but different than what I knew. So after work, we quit at 2 o'clock in the morning. I hung out with him, just talking, until about 5 in the morning.
You did like a Relics of Rarity show. I say, okay, you stayed up all night like I like to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you guys are talking till 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right, and then he came back a couple of times, and then I found out where he was working. I went down to hear the Four Lovers, and much to my surprise, I heard the best singer I ever heard in my life, Frankie Valli. When he was a kid, he was absolutely awesome because he just had something that nobody else had, and there was like an instant connection. You know, he loved my musicality, and I just loved the way he sang. So he asked me about 6 months later if I would ever consider leaving the band I was with. And I wanted to go back to school, and I figured if I went and worked less nights a week, I could wind up going to Manhattan School of Music to really pursue the dream that I really had, which was to become a music writer. So I joined the band, and I became one of the Four Lovers. And during that period of time, within the next year, we recorded the song Coma Si Bella.
Which was not on RCA, though, was it?
No, RCA dropped them because Elvis became a super success in 56. And then all of the acts that really were having success, RCA really stopped promoting because they concentrated on Elvis. And they put that machine to work behind Elvis, and Frankie was without a contract at that point. So we were looking for something to do, and that's one of the reasons why we hooked up with Bob Crewe, is because of that record.
Coma Si Bella?
Yeah, because Frankie went into New York to try to make a deal for it and ran into Bob Crewe.
See, now I feel bad. I didn't even pull out of the vault. I do have the 45. It's a little bit scratchy. We'll have to like backtrack and play that very important 45. We'll go grab the scratchy 45 version. You probably have a nice clean version of it, don't you?
Version of it. In fact, over the past 2 or 3 years, there's a fellow by the name of Ken Charmer from Spain, who's involved in an organization that has been collecting all of these old classic records that we made as kids, and he's put together 6 CDs that he sent me, and they usually have about 30 or 40 songs on them. So I have a collection of over 100 songs.
Well, I'll make sure I give you my address. Oh, that's not what you had in mind?
Well, I can make a copy of it.
There you go. Listen, because this way we could play those nice, clean copies over the radio. I will go grab Come See Bella, and we'll listen to it. I didn't realize, quite frankly, that you were actually already involved, as one of the Four Lovers on that particular song, so that's pretty noteworthy. But if I could just move ahead for a moment, so now that you're one of the Four Lovers and you're actually working in a studio, of course, we opened up with Walk Like a Man. You actually ended up being the arranger on that Four Seasons song, which of course became a mega hit for Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Well, in the beginning, what happened was after Frankie ran into Bob Crewe, and he heard the record, he asked if we wanted to play on his records that he was making. And we started to work for Bob Crewe in 1959. Bob was already a successful producer. He had written Silhouettes on the Shade. He wrote most of the Freddie Cannon hits.
He was working, of course, with Hal Miller.
Hal Miller and the Rays, and also he was responsible for Billy and Lily. He was responsible for producing a whole bunch of records. Plus, he had his own career as a singer. He had 2 albums out that he had recorded, which were really, really great records. He made 2 records with Ralph Burns.
Yeah, but they were not certainly not rock and roll type of records. It was more like a pop singer type of a record that he did.
Like Bobby Darin records.
Yeah, because I bought those albums, to be honest with you, and I paid good money for them. And then, you know, when I got them, for me personally, more into the rock and roll, it was a little bit of a disappointment, I might say. But you're right. If you liked the Bobby Darin and you understood it was a pop type of a record, then you certainly got what you were looking for.
Well, Bob was a unique addition to the mix, because he was not a musician. He was a great songwriter. But what he taught us was how to make records. And with an education, you know, working with a guy who had already made hit records, and we were kids at the time. So 1959, I was 21 years old. So here I was in a studio working at the age of 21 years old, and Bob said, well, we need strings on this. I had never written for violins, but I had looked at a bunch of scores. So he said he wanted strings on a particular thing, so I went home and I wrote strings, you know, really not knowing what they were going to sound like. I mean, I had a general idea of what you should write for strings, but you know, he made it possible for me to more or less have the opportunity to get my arrangements recorded by better musicians. So we started to work for him, and some of the early records that we made... I think the first record that I made with him was with a kid by the name of Kevin McQuinn. And I remember that I wrote this thing.
The first record that you did, you mean as an arranger?
An arranger on a professional record that was actually released.
You're talking about the very first release ever on the Diamond label.
Very good.
Every Step of the Way.
Right.
Which I have, not ready to go yet, but I have it here.
We also did with Hal Ray, An Angel Cried, which is actually in the Jersey Boys.
You know, I was going to say something to you, you know, that had you not gone to see, and I know, of course, you had involvement with it, and we'll talk about that during the interview, but had you not seen the Jersey Boys, do you think your recollection of the events would be this good? Because, you know, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is just like Jersey Boys. Or...
Well, some of the stuff that I'm telling you is not in sequence with the Jersey Boys.
It seems like it might have been. I remember the part, of course, and by the way, I loved it. I, you know, what did you think of it?
Well, when I first went to see it, I didn't know anything about the show. Frankie didn't really tell me anything. And
is Frankie the one who called you to come see the show, or was it Gaudia that called?
It was, I forget how I was invited, but there were a bunch of us that were invited for opening night, but Frankie's been talking about this for 15 years. So, you know,
I didn't realize that it, you know, had been in the works for that, you know, been talked about for that long a period of time, is that right?
Well, originally he was approached to do a movie on the Four Seasons, and he turned it down. The Four Seasons are probably one of the most unique groups that has ever been, because they own their own masters and they also own the publishing. Frankie, from the very beginning, was very sharp.
How did they end up owning their own publishing?
Well, when because Gaudio wrote the songs.
Right, so wouldn't Gaudio own the publishing?
Well, Gaudio was part of the band, and Frankie understood about the publishing. So what they did was the original songs that they recorded all went into a publishing company that all four of them owned.
Okay.
So
they were actually very lucky about that then.
And then secondly, they owned the masters. They owned them in conjunction with Bob Crew, which no group owned at that particular time. They were like the first group that ever owned their own masters. So, in the early days of setting up the business of the Four Seasons, Frankie was pretty smart in organizing everything. But I forget the question now you asked me.
Well, I mean, let's stick with what you were saying though. In other words, I think you're saying he was smart in how he organized things. But, you know...
The question asked was about how I looked at it, you know, how I looked at the Jersey Boys. It was pretty difficult, the first 30 minutes, because a lot of the events, although they happened, did not happen exactly the way that they were being portrayed, but for the story, they made more sense.
Well, give us an example. Like, for example, what did you see in the play, and then tell us what you remember as having really happened?
Well, the play actually doesn't really lay out the responsibility factor. In other words, Frankie's involvement and his brilliance in putting the people together. The show actually gives Tommy the credit for doing that, but Frankie is really the one that found the people.
Why do you think they did that? Why do you think they gave Tommy DeVito credit in the play when your recollection was it was Frankie Valli who had put everybody together?
Well, in the beginning, it was Tommy's band.
Okay, so they just left it in the play as being Tommy's band, but in reality, what you're saying is the responsibility ultimately went over to Frankie Valli.
Well, for example, Frankie found me. Frankie found Gaudio 3 years before he joined the Four Seasons. When we were promoting Coma Cibella, we were promoting the record in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the same time period, the Skyliners released Since I Don't Have You.
And Bob Gordy, of course, was, a member of the Royal Teens at the time.
Royal Teens, and they were on a road promoting one of their records. So Bob and I met Gordio, and Frankie started to talk to Gordio, and he met him at that particular time. Now, in the play, Joe Pesci is given credit for Gordio and Frankie hooking up, but that is true because Pesci found Gordio 3 years later and then hooked him back up with Frankie. But Frankie originally met Gordio, and it was Frankie's brainchild that actually brought him into the Four Seasons, or at that point, the Four Lovers, because Gordio became a Four Lover.
And of course, tonight we're celebrating the genius of Frankie Valli for bringing you, Charlie Colalo, into the mix. You know, I say that very sincerely because having talked to a lot of musicians, Charlie, let me just pat you on the back and say that, you know, although the people who buy records, many of them don't know who you are. And I hopefully you understand that and that doesn't trouble you because, you know, not everybody looks at the records, looks at the liner notes, looks at the credits. People just hear a record and say, oh, that's the Four Seasons. Guys like me, and the reason I asked you to be on the show, quite frankly, and I want you to understand this right up front, is that I have the utmost respect for your contributions, and I understand how so very often it's really the arranger, more so than even producers, that actually bring the sounds and make the record what it is. And, you know, I think it's important as somebody like myself who has the ability to bring a guy like you on. I mean, I'm honored to have you here, and I want many of you to know that if you love the Four Seasons, you gotta love Charlie Colalo. Not because he played in the Four Seasons for 1 year when he took Nick Massey's place. The significant contribution that Charlie Colalo did, as we will talk about, he was the arranger, not all, but most of the great Four Seasons records, and that is a footnote that needs to be highlighted and put in a big neon light and lit up for those that listen to those songs, because tremendous contributions you've made to the music business. And of course, we're talking now Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, but we'll talk about some other records as well as we go on.
Give me an opportunity to say thank you and that you're very kind.
You know what I'm talking about, though. I know you know what I'm saying.
Well, I'll give you a little insight about what happened from the very beginning. My hobby as a kid was writing music, so I started to write when I was about maybe 15, and I started to write lead sheets for my father. Then I started to copy jazz solos off records for my father, who was a trumpet player. And I actually became interested in writing arrangements. And locally in Newark, New Jersey, when there was an act that needed music written, I was the guy that they would come to. So by 17 or 18 years old, I was writing arrangements. And when I met Frankie, I had no concept of pop music. I had absolutely no understanding about how to make records, how to write that type of music. I was totally in the dark because my background had been as a jazz musician listening to big band and jazz and going to a music and arts high school, being exposed to classical music, I never listened to most of the stuff that Frankie exposed me to. Now, after he exposed me to it, and I started to get an understanding about what pop music was, I eventually developed my own style of writing it. But basically, it was Frankie who really introduced me to the kind of music that ultimately made the Four Seasons successful.
And of course, when you say pop music, you're talking about the music of the Four Seasons and rock and roll as we might think of it.
Exactly.
You know, because for some people, I just don't want some people in the audience to get confused when you say pop music. Sometimes, you know, we think of the early 50s.
Well, for example, when I did Walk Like a Man, Gaudio, who wrote the song with Bob Crew, pretty much laid out the record. All I had to do was write with Bob Gaudio playing on the piano. So I had very little input to the creativity of how that was put together. But I did offer the solution to the introduction because of some of the suggestions that I wound up making. But Gaudio was pretty much the one who ran the musical show at that particular time. And when I would do the records with Gaudio, I'd go to his house, and he would sit down and he would say, "I want this," and I'd say, "Okay, if you were going to do this, then you need to do this." And he'd say, "Okay, that sounds good." And then I would know that if he wanted a particular figure, that particular figure would be able to be supported by other things. So what I did was I took his basic ideas and orchestrated them. And later on, after making the records for 6 months or so, I started to get my own feel, and my own input started to come into being a part of the group.
I was going to actually ask you that as time went on and the Four Seasons were scoring, you know, hits and more hits and so forth, did they sort of like, you know, loosen up the leash and allow Charlie to almost create on his own without...
I'll give you an example of something. By Candy Girl, the original the intro, they couldn't come up with an intro, so I came up with the Candy Girl intro vocally, and then I also wrote out the arrangement because Gaudio didn't write the song. But when it came time to Dawn Go Away was the first brainchild. That was the first Charlie Colello record.
Well, let's listen to that second Four Season hit that you arranged. You were just talking about it briefly here. Let's give a quick listen to Candy Girl, and then we'll be back on Relics and Rarities with my guest tonight, Charlie Colello.
Love me until the end of
That, of course, was the second hit 45 that Charlie Colello had with the Four Seasons. And, of course, as we were talking, he mentioned that actually the first record that he remembers arranging for Bob Crewe, the first record on the Diamond record label, was Kevin McQuinn. Let's take a listen to Kevin McQuinn. Of course, is Kevin McQuinn, the very first Charlie Colello arranged 45. Kevin McQuinn, actually the first record that you arranged for Bob Crewe, first record on the Diamond label called Every Step of the Way. And I know that a lot of our listeners, of course, who love those rarities, that's why the show is called Relics and Rarities, they're probably wondering, you know, who is Kevin McQuinn? So maybe you could take a moment. What do you remember about the session with Kevin McQuinn?
Well, a lot of times I never met the artist. Bob Crewe wrote the songs and we would make the tracks and he would usually finish up the records. So I think in the beginning I met Hal Ray and I met a couple of the artists, but I didn't really meet all the artists.
So let me try and understand that, because I know if I'm a little bit confused, the audience is probably real confused. So Bob Crewe would come to you and say, okay, I've got this kid Kevin McQuinn, and we want to cut a record with him.
The artist was insignificant. The fact was that we were going to go and record, and Bob would say we're going to record these songs. And we'd go in and we'd cut the tracks, and then he would put the singers on it.
Was it important at all to, like looking back, for example, do you think it was important to get to know the singer? I mean, for example, some arrangers, you know, that I talk to, they have a good recollection of the session, and what I'm hearing now is not so much that you don't have a recollection of it, but in the session that you did, you felt it was not important to actually know or talk with or get or have a rapport with the artist?
Well, taking into consideration, I had no concept about how records were made. When I was 18 years old, I had a friend of mine who invited me to Columbia Records, and I saw Tony Bennett record with Count Basie's band. This was actually the first professional I ever saw.
Okay.
Now, when I started to make records with Bob Crewe, this is 3 years later, Bob Crewe made records where we would go in and we would record. There were multi-track recordings, so we were doing four-track recordings. We would do the rhythm section, and then we would mix it down to one track. Then we'd do the horns, and we'd overdub horns on it and strings.
Was that unusual? Now, because the Kevin McQuinn record was done, what, around 1960?
No.
61, maybe?
It was done around 59, 60, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it might have been 60, to be honest with you.
We probably recorded it in 59, because that's when we started to do those records.
But that was done in multi-track at that time?
Yeah. They had a three-track. And then when I started to record with Crew, they had just started to use the four-track machine. So a lot of the things that we did, we used to multi-track. We'd go in and we cut the rhythm section, and after we made the rhythm track, that would be mixed down. Then we'd put the horns on. We'd overdub the horns. For example, on that particular record, there were three saxophone parts.
On the Kevin McQuinn record?
Right, and Mikey Petrillo played all three saxophone parts, and that was mixed down. And then we put foot stomps, and then after we put all that stuff on, then we'd do background voices. So the artist really never came in until after the record was finished. So we would work on doing the track, and when I say we, it was a combination of myself, Bob Gaudio, Tommy DeVito, Nick Massey, and some additional musicians that were hired every now and then by Bob.
So basically the musicians on that Kevin McQuinn record, you know, not all of them, but a good many of them were actually the Four Seasons.
Right, we were the studio band.
Anybody from the studio band ever, you know, beside the Four Seasons, ever go on that you're aware of to have a career on their own that became maybe famous on their own? And let me give an example of what I mean by that. We had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, Johnny Madera, who did a lot of work in Philadelphia, and he mentioned that they had hired a studio musician, young kid, who played piano on a lot of the songs, and of course that kid, you know, had a career many years later on his own. His name was Leon Huff.
Right.
You ever remember any musicians in those early days that, you know, looking back, it's like, wow, it's hard to believe that the guy who played, you know, whatever, turned out to be such and such?
Well, there were a lot of musicians that were that we used. For example, we used Vinnie Bell. Vinnie Bell had his own hit record. In the early 60s, I did a Liza Minnelli session with Bob Crew, and Peter Allen wrote the songs, and I think he wrote some of the songs, and Doc Sarensen played trumpet on it.
That's the kind of facts we're looking for.
There were always musicians that had their own careers. Al Cioli used to play guitar on some of the records.
Okay.
These were pretty, you know, well-known musicians that had their own recording careers.
Okay, so you did the record with Kevin McQuinn, by the way, which is one of the early ones, and then of course we were talking about you scored, you know, real big with Walk Like a Man and Candy Girl, and something you alluded to before, that as you became successful in working with, you know, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and Bob Crew, they started to give you the leeway to be creative on your own. And
well, it wasn't really like that.
Okay.
What we had was, there were a bunch of talented people involved in this. Gaudio was a genius. Bob Crew was a genius. Bob Crew used to keep us focused on what we were doing. Bob Gaudio was very methodical about what he did, and I was able to write it all down and get all of their ideas and organize them and make everything come together.
But you said that on Dawn something was different.
However, when sometimes they would not have the idea, and that was the case with Dawn Go Away. The writer who wrote Dawn Go Away, I discovered through my father, was Sandy Linzer. Sandy wrote Dawn Go Away with Gaudio.
Who, by the way, I got to tell you up front, that as much as I have this tremendous admiration for you, Charlie, in the Hall of Fame, my Hall of Fame, right next to you, I would put Sandy Linzer and Danny Randell, two great writers.
Sandy was writing with a kid who was studying with my father. My father was a trumpet teacher. And my father brought them over the house one day, and I listened to the songs. The songs were terrible, but the lyrics were great. And Sandy wrote the lyrics, And I asked Sandy if he would like to meet Frankie and Bob Gaudio and maybe start to write with Gaudio. And I put the two of them together. So this was the first song that Sandy had ever gotten recorded. And when they played the song was a folk song. But the afternoon, that just before I started to work on the records, Frankie and I were sitting in the car, and he was marveling at the feel of the Kai Winding record, More, and that gallop in the rhythm, that dun tick a dun tick a dun tick a dun tick a dun. He was marveling at that, and he said, you know, we should use this feel on one of our records. So when we were going over the five songs that we were going to record the following day, we were in Bob Crew's office. When they played me Dawn, I said, you know, give me about 20 minutes with the song. I said, then give me an opportunity to work something up, because I think we might be able to use that feel on it.
The feel from the Kai Winding tune.
Yeah. And I came up with the figure, the somewhere figure, the dun 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 dun. But I played it all on a piano, and I played the whole song with the whole tone modulation and the triplets and everything. And while I was working on it, Frankie heard me playing it on a piano. He came running. He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm playing Dawn." He says, "What? That's Dawn?"
Because it was so different from the folk thing.
Yeah, Gaudio really loved it. So when I wrote it out, I came up with that bell sound that became an intricate part of the sound from that point on. And I came up with the rhythm and all of the ingredients. That was really the first record that I made that I can actually say was a Charlie Colello record.
Pretty as a midsummer's morn, they called her. Bang!
course, is a tune called Be My Girl by the Four Evers, which came out on the Smash label. And, Charlie, do you remember that record? Because you arranged it.
Yes, I do remember the record.
You know, everybody swore. That was like the big controversy. Everybody wanted to know if, in reality, that was the Four Seasons who were just, you know, somehow putting out another record, you know, because sometimes groups had so many songs to put out that they would come up with these pseudonames like you guys did with the Wonder Who. So why don't you reveal the mystery as to who the Four Evers were and what involvement did Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons happen to have on that particular record?
Well,
you feel all this pressure on you now, don't you?
No, I've gone through this once before, and
I'm not surprised.
The record was produced by Al Kasha. And I was introduced to Al Kasha by Harriet Wasser, who recently died. And those who know the background of Harriet Wasser, she's a very, very interesting person. He was responsible for introducing me to Lou Christie, who I had hit records with, and several other people. But anyway, I met Al Kasha, and I started to make records with Al Kasha. And he found this group in Brooklyn called the Four Evers. And because I was connected to the Four Seasons, I don't remember how Gaudio got involved, because Gaudio didn't know Al Kasha. So I think I got Gaudio involved. Now this is you know, speculation on my part, because this happened many, many years ago. And for some reason, I think that Frankie came to the session and wound up singing on the record. But I only know that because somebody played the record for me, and I heard it, and I could obviously hear Frankie's voice on it. But the lead singer, the kid who did the lead, I think his name was Joey something. The group was really, really good, but for some reason they were on the same label as the Four Seasons, and I don't think the record really got a fair shot. But there was really no mystery involved about it. But because I was working with Al Kasha, I think I was the catalyst between connecting all those people together.
Well, brother, the mystery, the mystery for many people was, I mean, some people probably swore that it wasn't just Frankie Valli maybe and Bob Gaudio in the session. They might have swore it was actually the Four Seasons.
No, because Tommy and Nicky, although they were Four Seasons, they weren't really involved in the record business. They were involved in the Four Seasons business. But Bob Gaudio was a songwriter, and on occasion, I was called once to do some records with Kai Winding, and I called Gaudio, and Gaudio composed two songs that probably very few people have ever heard, but these were brilliant compositions that he wrote.
These are records that Kai Winding recorded on what, on the Verve label, I would imagine?
Yeah. And they were written by Gaudio. The songs were brilliant. And Gaudio made a lot of other records other than Four Seasons records back then. I remember we recorded, I think, a Bobby V record. I'm not sure. There were several records that I made with Gaudio that other than Four Seasons records, and Frankie was always involved in it, pretty much everything that was being done at that particular time.
Well, from what you're saying, that even if Frankie wasn't directly involved, everything that Gaudio wrote went into a publishing company that all four of them seemed to have owned.
Yeah, but Frankie was more than just, you know, his interest in it was just more than business, because Frankie was basically a music fan, a fan. Like when I scored my first motion picture, he flew to London with me when I did the score.
What was the motion picture?
It was a movie called Lipstick, I think. I think it was that, or Who Killed Teddy Bear? I'm not really sure.
Who Killed Teddy Bear? Oh my goodness, you should not have said that. There is a record in Who Killed Teddy Bear that I played it once on my XM radio show, and challenged the nation to for somebody please to tell me who's doing the record. I have the movie, but unfortunately, when I play the movie, there's no credits that tell you who sang the song. There's a song in Who Killed Teddy Bear called, I think it's called Born to Be Bad.
I think Gaudio wrote all the songs in that movie.
Yeah, you wouldn't happen to know. Here was my guess on it. I have a crazy theory on this. I think that the song in that movie, Who Killed Teddy Bear, this song called Born to Be Bad, I thought it might have been sung by a guy who did record for Dino Voice. His name was George McCannon III.
It could have been.
Okay, but honestly, I take it you don't remember the song Born to Be Bad, though, do you?
You'd have to play it for me because, you know, with the amount of records that I've made in my life, I'll give you an example of something. Nancy Sinatra called me after her father died, and she said she was re-releasing a record, and she was calling to get some information from me about the record that we made. So I remember recording her, and she sent me a copy of the record. I listened to the record. I know I did it. I know, because I could hear my arrangement. I know I did it, but I can't tell you anything about the record. I can't tell you where we recorded it, who played on it. And normally with the hits, I was able to at least remember.
Well, that you remember those because you get checks.
Well, not necessarily. I would remember them because I'd hear them on a radio. So the thought of the record was always fresh in my mind.
Listen, let me quickly.
So for Neil Diamond, and I remembered using two trumpets and two trombones. But for years, I thought my father played on the record. And recently, I found out. I found out from one of the trumpet players that it wasn't my father who played on the record. My father contracted the record, but the two trumpet players were Ernie Royal and Joe Shepley. And I know that I used two trombones, and I can only remember who one of the trombone players was. I don't remember who the second trombone player was, although I could pretty much guess because I know who I used.
And the Neil Diamond record you're talking about is what, the Sweet Caroline?
Yeah.
Which you
whenever,
did...
Whenever people go Sweet Caroline, Sweet Caroline, what's the thing that everybody sings next?
Ba, ba, ba.
Colello.
What's that?
That's Colello,
huh? Which, by the way, if you look at 45, sometimes you'll see Charlie's first name is left off. It just says Colello Production.
Well, that was crew. That was the artistic direction of crew. He wanted to just give me some kind of a spin, but you know.
Well, let me say this to you. I think it was a good thing because you know the way I used to look at it. You know, when I would buy 45s, Charlie, you know, if it had you know that quote unquote Colello stamp on it, it was kind of like you know like the good housekeeping stamp of approval.
Well, crew actually was responsible for that, but. I was never into the notoriety or the fame factor. And in many respects, I was sort of glad that my life was sort of kept obscure. And for many reasons, A, I was able to live a pretty normal life, and B, I didn't have the obvious problems of not being able to, you know, go places without being annoyed. I know.
Well, that's the nice thing about being an arranger. You know, you've contributed, but for many people, it's really the artists that often have that type of a problem. We do have a phone call. I'd like to just quickly give out our phone number. It's area code 732-866-4475. And we have a caller holding from Florida, I believe. Gary is his name. Gary, are you there?
Yep, Gary's here. Hello, Dave.
And say hello to Charlie Colello.
Hi, Gary.
Hello, Charlie. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Where in Florida are you?
I'm in Melbourne.
Melbourne. I'm in Boca Raton.
Okay. You like it down there, eh?
I've been here 15 years.
I've been here 3.
Not a bad place to live.
Yeah,
well, today was
nice.
Hot.
Yeah, it's not as hot as Miami and all those other southern areas, but you get a nice breeze through here. Hey, I got a couple of questions for you, Mr. Colello, if you don't mind.
You can call him Charlie, I think. Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right. Thank you, Charlie. There was two songs. One was Goodnight, My Love, that was done by Jesse Belvin originally. And the Four Seasons put it on, I have one of their albums. It was a double album. But I have not been able to get that song on CD. It's not on any of the Four Seasons CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And another song I tracked down, and I wonder if Dave the Rave knows about this one. It's a song called This Is Real, and it was done on the by Frankie Valli. I'm not sure what year it was, but do you have a recollection of that song?
Hold on, I'm going to look at my Frankie Valli archive. And I'll tell you if I have a copy of it. Hold on.
Not exactly sure what year it came out, but...
you know what label it was on?
I don't know the label, but I'm looking at a CD that I managed to get. It says here Bell, EMI Music.
Well, that would be, of course, the publishing.
It could have been. It could have been the record that he made with Hank Medrus.
Of course, Hank Medrus being one of the original Tokens.
But Hank produced the record "Our Day Will Come" for Frankie, and in that that could have been the on that Bell session because he was with.